kids scream for my ice cream, and I scream for cash back on everything from sprinkles to super freezers, thanks to my Amex Blue Business Cash Card. Who wants a brain freeze?
Get 2% cash back on your first $50,000 per year in purchases, and 1% after that with an Amex Blue Business Cash Card. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/bluebusinesscash. Built for business by American Express.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I wanna flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead.
Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. This is your host, Rachel Jameson. Today's interview is about making some extra money on the homestead with a bed and breakfast. Hello, everyone. I am speaking today with Robin Holstein of the Holstein Homestead. Actually, I believe you call it the Homestead House.
Holstein House, yeah.
Holstein House.
Mm-hmm.
And you are located in Virginia or West Virginia.
West Virginia, yeah.
West Virginia. And you have a small homestead, kind of like mm-hmm. I do, a small mm-hmm. one. But you also have started a few years ago, from what I've read, an Airbnb. So yeah. I wanted to first let you introduce yourself and then talk about kind of how you got to this place. And then we'll move into some questions. Maybe we can help someone else that might want to do something like this for their home. So sure. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm Robin Holstein, and I've been married for 21 years to my husband, Wayne. And I have an older son from my first marriage that lives in Virginia. He's 37 now, I think. Isn't that terrible? I have to think about it. But I've lived in Kanawha County, West Virginia, the majority of my life, with the exception of about 4 years when I lived in lived at Fort Hood, Texas with my first husband. He was in the service. And in 2017, I decided that I was going to start, we have a 100-year-old house. And I decided that we have, you know, they have the extra bedroom and I could use a little cash and I don't need to do anything extravagant. So I listed on Airbnb. And, I've been doing that ever since, but I've also started a few years ago taking direct bookings, which takes Airbnb and their fees out of the mix. So I like to do that. But as far as homestead type activities, I've always believed in having, several weeks up to a few months of food on hand, just as part of life and the way I grew up and things. But I started home canning around 2002, 2003, and started dehydrating about a year or so after that. And so I just kind of slowly meandered into the food preparation and storing for longer terms and being aware of emergencies and in the area and things along those lines. I've always had a couple tomato plants somewhere all my life. So when we moved into this house, of course, I didn't originally live here, but when we moved into this house a few years ago, I have enough property in the back. I have a small coop. I've got 7 chickens and 3 adult ducks, and I now have 4 ducklings, not even a week old yet. So I do sell those eggs to folks in the area. And, I make a little soap. I haven't made enough soap to be fancy and add all the colors and stuff. Right. I do add a few scents here and there. I do a little bit from lard and from other oils and stuff. And I do some melt and pour just, to have something cute around holidays that's quick and easy. But So I do a little bit of all kinds of stuff like that, and I really enjoy it. And started the podcast, the actual podcast that I have, a Hosting House podcast, back in October of 2022. I've had a YouTube channel for years, but I didn't do much with it, and started trying to update that about the same time. And just a little bit of all kinds of stuff. So,
well, that's fun. So, do you work outside the home, or is this your job?
I have worked outside the home. I worked 12 years for the state of West Virginia. Then I left that because of lack of upward mobility, and the husband was working a job that he said, you know, I do fine. You know, you don't have to work outside. And I said, okay. But I've always done something. So I started my own consulting business, administrative consulting, virtual assistants, what they call it, out in the wild. And I did that from 2007. And I still kind of do it. It's just not much of what I do. I kind of migrated that into mobile notary services. So I do travel in the general area to people on behalf of, like, title companies or attorneys or things, to people who can't get into their offices, and I will go. I've completed certifications and got some insurances and bondings and stuff to be able to do that. So, for instance, if you were, here's one of my favorites. It's been about 3 years ago now, during the Memorial Weekend, when the bikers will ride to the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, yes. D.C. Yes. There's a big bunch of them that come through here. And I got a call from a company that I'm associated with, or listed with, I should say. They had someone coming through who was selling property in California, but he was on this ride and he needed the paperwork on his side completed. Oh, okay. So because of the special training and stuff that I've had, I was able to, they were able to forward the documents to me. I met him at a local hotel down in the lobby. We sat down, went through all the paperwork, notarized what needed notarized, watched him sign a document, and I took them and got them FedEx for him so he could complete that, the sale of his house while he was on the road. So it's really fun. I recently did
so
one.
You have just kind of multiple streams.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
I think
Yes, and they're not, really, I mean, it's not large, chunks of stuff, you know, right, but it is several. Yeah.
I think that's really common for a lot of people that are homesteading.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not so much farming, where you actually file a Schedule F and all that stuff. But for a lot of homesteaders, I'm noticing a lot of them have multiple revenue streams from multiple places. And
Because you can't. I mean, I know there's the debate out there about whether we're going to digital currency or whatever, but you have to have some form of cash, money, whatever you want, whatever it looks like, because in today's world, the majority of us cannot produce every single thing that we need, from our clothing to our shoes to all of our food, without something from the outside. Plus, the government wants their tax dollars. And so, you know, in order to pay the taxes on Terra, you're going to have to sell something to get some cash.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as homesteaders, it's easier to have the multiple streams than one gig, mostly because usually that one gig takes up more than of your time than the multiple streams.
Yeah. Ability to flex your schedule.
Yeah, you can be flexible. And for me, I'm a little bit ADD, and like having all of the different plates spinning, as opposed to doing the same thing every day.
Yeah, yeah. But that's probably a common thread, I suspect.
Probably. So you had, we were just talking about before you came on, and I'm also in a group with you on Telegram, your group, and but we were talking about, and you've been talking about your little ducklings, and you actually had your mama duck. Your mama duck is the one that hatched them. You didn't use an incubator.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a really fun way to go, to watch that whole
process. It is. Now, my setup is a lot different than some of the other groups that, or other people that you will see talking about them in some of the groups that we're mutually involved with. I don't have a pond. I mean, I'm on actually a suburban lot. when this section of the county was initially settled, it was a long way from, I mean, well, not mileage wise, it's just as far now as it was, but it was a long way from the city when you were having to take, you know, in the 1900s, when you have to take the trains and stuff out and get around. So this was agricultural area, but now it's an older, early suburban kind of place. So I've got about, I don't know, two and a half average city lots, I guess, if you did it that way. And it's not all flat. So there's a big slope in the back. And the reason I bring this up is because I don't have a pond for my ducks. I don't have an area out in the South 40, you know, where they're hanging out or anything. So it is a Rubbermaid storage building that I have altered to make a coop. And I have cut all kinds of ventilation in the top of it and put hardware cloth up there so that it still gets very hot, but they can get out into the run. So they're not locked up in there all the time.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So because it gets a lot hotter than a wooden building. But and I've got a couple of manual open doors on one on each side. And one side goes to another little manufactured coop like you would buy at the Tractor Supply or Rural King or something. That was the original one that I had when I got chickens, so that the chickens would go over. They like to go over and lay eggs over there. Well, on the other side, we have a plastic. It's made to look like a wooden barrel, but we put a hole in and put a spigot in so that I can drain it. And I have some rocks in there for the ducks, and I fill that up. So that's their pond, if you want to call it.
Okay,
it's not very big at all, but that's their pond. That they got water, they can get in and swim and bathe a little bit in. But so all that to say, yeah, this hen is about 4 years old, and she'd never shown signs of trying to nest before. If she was hiding her eggs, which is entirely possible, she wasn't hiding them all in one place and never went to sit on them.
Okay.
So I started finding eggs under the litter in the coop. And after about the third one, it dawned on me, this one of the ducks, which I have a Pekin and I have a roan hen, one of them's trying to nest. Let's leave this alone and see what happens. And so she did in one corner of the coop. She started, you know, burying her eggs, and the Pekin would just lays them wherever.
Right.
But she started hiding them, and I decided to let her sit. And I started counting from the day I saw her sitting, where she didn't come out and spend time out in the yard all the time, because I let them out after a couple hours in the morning. And I marked the calendar, and I was off by one day. So I was expecting them to come last Thursday, and they started hatching on Wednesday afternoon. And she laid eight. Two of them were duds. She hatched six. One died the first day. One died the second day. And the other four are running around eating, splashing, playing.
Oh,
they're
fun.
Just in. Yeah, they're hysterical.
And what is but your male duck? What kind is your male duck?
He's a roan.
Okay.
He's a roan. But he will mate whatever.
Yeah.
He's not discriminatory.
I didn't know. So you have pure roan ducks then? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, how cute.
So, and I've not been around. I wasn't raised around it. When I was coming up here, and this is a town I was raised in, when I was coming up here, most of the agriculture was gone. People had backyard gardens, but they didn't have the hogs. They didn't have the chickens. They didn't have any of that anymore. The thing was, you know, bottle feed your babies and buy everything at the store. So I was removed from that. I'd hear people talk about it in the family, but I didn't have hands-on experience with that. So everything that I've figured out how to do has been either, you know, YouTube's books or asking other people. And I'm not real good at it, but it's fun trying. But yeah, she's the mama duck. She's something else. She will put that head down like you see in cartoons and just open her mouth and hiss and chase. And she's very protective. Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
Well, that's how she has to be.
Well, yeah, I kind of hope she has, but I kind of hope she doesn't have, because I hope nothing tries to get them. I mean, now the thing is because you can't keep them locked up in that coop. Now that they're out, and I've spent yesterday trying to duckling resist the run, because my birds have been old enough, it didn't matter, but things can get through chicken wire, you know, snakes.
Right,
and
yeah.
So I've tried to duckling resist so that they would at least stay there till they get big enough to you know, get out of the way of something that's coming after them. But I don't have a lot of predatory pressure on my birds, but we do have hawks that migrate through.
Yeah.
And of course, if it's dark enough for evening, you know, we do have raccoons, and we do actually have some coyotes in the area. But so far, I've not noticed any trying to get, you know, in our stuff. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun.
That is fun. Now, do you have a garden as well?
I have a small one. I have a small container garden. The yard is so oddly shaded by a house on this side, some very tall trees in the back, a building on this side, that if I tried to actually plant one, it's going to be like a snake in the backyard to match, you know, the so I've done better with container gardening, where I can, if they seem like the plants seem like they're not getting enough sunlight, I can scoot. And I'm, when I talk container, I mean like bags, feed bags or garden bags, and small pots and things that and buckets that you can move around. Not, you know, a lot of folks are using the raised beds that you buy once you get them started, you really can't move them.
Can't move them. We did for a long time. We had to take several trees down due to oak wilt, and once we did that, I had a lot more sun in my yard. But before that, I used to have the bucket garden on my back deck.
Yeah.
For the same reason. We just didn't have a lot of sun, and I would put all my sun loving plants in there, and they were 5-gallon buckets.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's basic. I just don't have the way the yard is. I just don't have the open space. And we have a travel camper that he uses when he works, when he goes out of state. And so it's backed in and part of the yard. So it's, I don't have the space for a traditional.
Yeah, this, you know, is what it's like garden. When you homestead in town and in the suburbs, you kind of make it work however you can.
Yeah, that's why when you asked me if I had a homestead, I said, you know, how do you define that? Because for a long time it's been the 5 or more acres and, you know, cows or sheep or some kind of larger livestock. And, you know, I don't even know that I've got space for. We've talked about rabbits. I just don't know if I can cull a rabbit or not. I just don't.
No, they're kind of cute.
Yeah, they're just awfully. I used to have a rabbit back in the day, a rabbit skin coat. That was back in the 70s. It was really popular. And I think, how in the world? Oh, I just don't know if I could do it. I've had to take out some chickens. Mine aren't for meat. They're for eggs. But you know, I guess if I had to, it would be hard.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I mean, eventually you have to, I guess.
Mindset. It's definitely a mindset, and I don't think anybody should ever take it lightly. You know, no matter how many times you do it.
Yeah, there's something not right with somebody that gets
that enjoys it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, really? Now, I'm not saying like, oh, this is going to be good steak, you know. As
right.
In,
oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. They take joy in the actual killing part. Yeah.
But yeah, so I see the definition of homesteading, you know, shuffling a little bit.
Yeah, I think especially in the world that we live in, it's the last several years, too, it's gotten very expensive to own large pieces of land. And so I think a lot of people are starting to homestead where they're at. And that's why at the end of every podcast that I do, I always say grow where you're planted. Because
that's very good.
I mean, you just grow, you have to grow where you're planted. You've learned that. I mean, even in the city, you can buy bushels of things maybe from the farmer and then come home and can them. Or you can do a lot of things at home, or you can grow under lights. A lot of people are growing hydroponics and stuff inside homes. And
I haven't done the hydroponics specifically, but I got one of those grow light things from, the big online box store.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And to try to keep a very expensive fern that I got last year, because on the front porch in the spring, I put flowers out. And this one, I just splurged and said, you know, I like this really big fern and it will look really nice right here. And I thought, you know, this thing is so expensive, I got to try to keep it. And I'm not good at overwintering tropicals. I've got a few houseplants, but when something like that, that needs the humidity, that needs, you know, but I tried to keep, there's a few fronds still alive, but that baby is cooked. I just really messed that thing up. I didn't get it right. But I've tried the sprouts in, you know, sprouts and microgreens and stuff. And I've tinkered with that a little bit. I'm not in the habit of it. It wasn't something that we usually eat. So it was interesting for a try. Yes, I can do this. I know how to do this, but to do it all the time, we didn't get into it. So
this episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Right. Yeah. So going on to your Airbnb or actually it's a bed and breakfast, because you also, like you said, direct bookings. What made you decided to do that? Because financially it was something that you wanted to do, but what made you decide that? Because yours is in your home. It's not a separate building.
Correct.
Is it?
Right.
Do you have a separate entrance?
No. Okay, no, you come in just like you're a cousin. You just come in the door and go upstairs.
So this is really your true old school bed and breakfast, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what made you decide that you were okay with that? What was the process like when you started thinking about having strangers basically in your home?
Well, I signed up for Airbnb a long time before I actually used it. And I spent a lot of time reading through the host side chat room that they have. And I read a lot of the questions. I read a lot about what different people were experiencing, especially the negative sides, so that I could have an idea of what could I get myself into. And I still felt like, you know, that this was manageable if I was careful. Airbnb does give the benefit, especially if you're starting out, of a pseudo verification. And I say pseudo because you're supposed to upload a government ID.
Yes.
And you're supposed to have a valid email account, and they're supposed to verify all this stuff. And I'm not saying they don't, but what I'm saying is that you can still fool it. Or if you don't, and one of the things is, as a host, you can require when they show up that they show you the ID and it match who said they were, reserving the room. So there are some protections there. And I was reading, I got onto some rooms in Facebook as a potential bed and breakfast. And I was reading some about, you know, folks in my general location that have traditional, you know, Victorian style home type, bed and breakfast, and was reading and talking back and forth with some of those folks. And I just felt like, you know, I'm home a lot. I'm not always getting paid just while I'm home. And we have the room that's not being used.
Right.
So I thought, well, I'll give it a try and see what happens. And there's the very low barrier to entry. I mean, you just need a room. You need some clean sheets and some clean towels and stuff to really get started. Well, of course, internet and stuff to post. But and that's what I did. I did buy clean clean sheets or new sheets because I thought, you know, if I'm going like that and you're not family, I kind of don't want to sleep on your sheets.
Right.
And I just used what I had and set the room up. There's not a lot of stuff in the room. There's a dresser. Mm-hmm. There's a console that holds a small TV. We eventually put in a workspace desk so that I could, you know, you could still access the internet and work there, but I didn't have a dedicated spot like a table. Okay. So now I have an antique, it's really a dresser, a ladies dresser with the camelback mirror on it. And I have that set up with a chair as the workspace. And, you know, there's a closet and a room and lights and all that stuff. So I just tidied that up and took out anything that didn't absolutely. I thought if I was in a hotel room, what would I need? Mm-hmm. I have these things there, and then what makes it feel like a nice, comfortable room? So I added a few little touches that weren't too personal.
Right.
There are photos of my father when he was a child, like 2 or 3 years old, but you wouldn't immediately connect that. It's not like a picture of me and my dad and my husband. It's not a bunch of family pictures. So, but I thought, you know, there's a lot of people doing this across the country and across the world, and it can't be that terrible if there's that many people doing it and it's a little extra pocket money. So, you know, the utilities are going to be used, whether there's one extra person or two extra people in the house. You know, it's not, there's not a big investment, and it's been a lot of fun meeting these people.
Yeah,
so
I bet.
The first inquiry I had was from someone who was supposedly local who was trying to get away from a spouse. And, you know, everything in me said, don't do this. And I didn't. I said, no, I'm sorry. I'm just not comfortable with, because you can turn them down on Airbnb. And okay. There's a, you know, they get kind of, you know, Airbnb is in the business of making money.
Yeah.
They don't want you turning people down. So they discourage you from doing that. But there are ways you can do it. And so I clicked, no, I'm not comfortable with this, because I don't want to share, I don't want to rent the room to people who are local with stories like, you know, I just need a place to stay till I find a place to stay, you know, because you're just asking for trouble there. And I have rented to people who are local who are coming into town for, you know, work conferences and stuff like that. So, but so it was really interesting in getting started. And I was nervous because, okay.
Yeah, that would be it would be a little nervous for me, especially since you said your husband does go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't announce when he's gone. Right. I don't tell the guests
for sure
that he's gone,
yeah.
You know, but I'm not a martial arts expert, but I'm not afraid of you, honey. You know, so I don't tell people all of the stuff, you know, but I'm not worried about you. You're not going to bother me.
When did you decide to start adding breakfast to that? Or was that right away?
I always did. Okay. I always did.
Now, how does that work with Airbnb? Do you just say that you offer that? And
well, I'm of the opinion that it's supposed to be there anyway.
Okay.
Because the original, and I got the book on the creation and the of Airbnb and its history up to I don't remember when it was published. It was published about 5 or 6 years ago, and read through that. And the original Airbnb was an airbed in a guy's, you know, apartment while he was, because he was trying to make money while he was in college, or both of the guys, they were roommates, I guess. And so there was, you know, breakfast was like cereal or something, you know, it wasn't a whole lot, but it was always part of it. Now, it has been, people have taken it to mean airbed and bath, meaning, you know, bathroom and stuff. But originally, that's not exactly what it was. But I've always, plus if it's going to be a B&B, it's bed and breakfast. So right. I've always offered something. And I've added to it as I've, like with sourdough, I love trying, and I'm not very good at sourdough. I'm just good enough that you can eat it. But I can't make all the pretty designs and stuff yet. I'm still working on that. But, you know, I can, by dabbling in sourdough, I can make my own bagels. I can make my own English muffins, and I can make, you know, sourdough breads. So when I'm doing this, if I'm doing it before, like we've got a guy coming in, he probably won't eat it though. He's going to run a race locally, and I doubt that he'll eat much more than fruits and stuff. But I'll have, you know, if I'm working on that stuff this week, and if you've ever dabbled in sourdough, you know, you don't just start it that day and finish it that day. It takes a couple of days, and you got to plan it.
Sure.
So I'll play around with that maybe and offer that. And if, you know, if he wants it, if he doesn't, it's okay. But when there's only a couple people at the max, because I don't take kids, and so it's either going to be, you know, one person or two.
Okay.
You're not talking about that much anyway.
So do you find that offering that homemade breakfast, do you find that people are drawn to that? Do you think that is a bonus?
Some of them are. Some of them eat, some of them don't. Okay. Some of them are just, you know, I'm trying to get from point A to point B, and I just want to drop off and sleep, and I'll be out of here before, you know, any reasonable person would have breakfast. Sometimes I have it set, the tables, I have the table set, and I have the breads and stuff covered, so it's not laying out, you know, but some of them will sit down and just have coffee.
Okay.
It's as different as people are. Some of them will say, yeah, I did notice that, because one of the hangups with Airbnb is that not everybody reads the full description or looks at the whole listing. So some of them will flip through all the pages and say, like the young man that's coming this weekend, I see you have a couple dogs. Are they both boxers? So he was asking about that. Or I have had people say, I saw that you have homemade breads. I'm excited to try them. So, right. But not everybody does that. So there are some that do.
Do you offer any of that for sale? I know that you also have an Etsy page, but I didn't know if you offered any like jams or jellies for sale.
I do have some. I don't like sell it on Etsy. I'm hesitant to get involved in that, because if somebody gets sick, you know, I'm not running a commercial kitchen.
Right.
So I'm hesitant to do that. Now, if somebody's here and I've served them, you know, jelly that I've fixed myself, and I'll tell them, you know, this is grape jelly that I made last year, this year, whenever. And they say, I'd like to buy some, because I do have a note in the room that said I have a binder in the room, and in the binder is a page that talks about things that we do offer to sell, like soaps and stuff.
Okay. That's cool.
So, if they ask, yeah, I do, but I'm hesitant to get into the Etsy selling of food.
Yeah, I get it. Well, then you got to ship it, and it
you got to ship it, and you, and then that's some more of this aggravating people who don't read everything, saying, well, I thought when I got it, it was going to be, you know, soft white bread like I get at the store. No.
But it's, you know, it's great that you offer this as part of your Airbnb experience. Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever thought about getting involved in the, because Airbnb has their experiences?
I started looking at that. I really did. Okay. And I started an initial step, and then I got into the plan it out and send us your idea, and I never went further than that, because I couldn't figure how to make it work. I wasn't going to offer cooking.
Okay.
What I was going to offer was because there's a lot of people that do the cooking,
mm-hmm.
and baking. We have in West Virginia, there was a time when when the coal mines were not unionized, and there was a large strike that happened, and it got to being called the mine wars.
Oh, okay.
And it, to try to shorten that up a little bit, because I know we're on limited time, but these things started not immediately here, but a few miles from where I'm at, and up one of the hollows several miles. It takes about 15 minutes to get to the spot where one of the biggest rallies happened before things got really bad. So you've got a lady, I don't know how much you may have ever heard about this, because I don't know how much it's taught outside of West Virginia. A little old foul mouth lady, lovingly called Mother Jones, came out of Chicago. She was a unionizer and an agitator, they would call her at the time. And stories were starting to filter out to the national papers about harsh treatment of coal miners in West Virginia, and not just West Virginia, but this is where this kind of blew up. And you have a couple of coal mines in two different hollows. But now, you know, you're talking back when the only way you could get in and out of these places was to hop a ride on the railroad. You couldn't drive in. You couldn't ride a horse in. You could probably walk in up the railroad, but most of these areas were accessible only by railroad. The railroads were owned by the mine companies. The mine companies owned the houses the people lived in, the stores that they shopped in.
Right.
So as people started getting fed up with this, and they started to protest, if you opened your mouth against the coal company, you were shunned and your family was run out. So people were afraid to do it. This lady, Mother Jones, gets wind of this. She comes into the area. She travels up the railroad to one of the mines, or close to one of the mines, and starts talking it up. You guys have got to get together. You got to protest. You got to go on strike. You know, we're behind you. Excuse me. The UMW starts, or they weren't the UMW then, but the mine workers union started getting involved. And there are several spots in a reasonable drive, but it would be an all day event to do it. That I could, let's say, if you came and stayed and say, I want the coal mine war experience.
Oh, so you could do like a tour type.
I could do a tour. I couldn't figure out how to make it work because the church that was photographed and the photograph was on the national papers is still there, but it's not landmarked or it's not historical marked. There's a community mark. There is a historical marker for a community where, and it's debated of whether the sheriff had it done or the coal mine security firm had it done. But a Gatling gun type weapon was used to shoot at a tent colony of striking miners, and some, you know, one unborn child was killed. And in this town where this railroad went by, there is a historical marker. But there's it's just a historical marker. There's no structures or anything like that.
Stuff isn't marked.
Right. So then several miles away where this lady, Mother Jones, was on house arrest, the building she was in house arrest isn't there anymore. It's just an empty lot and it's not even marked. But now there are, what you end up having is you have this big mass of miners and their families walking from Paint Creek to Marmette, which is many miles, especially walking. There is now a sculpture in Marmette to commemorate the event. But then there's another area where you would go over the mountain, because the federal government even brought planes in and troops in and were shooting at the coal miners. So it was so that's why it's called a mine wars, is the federal government actually got involved and was shooting at people. And so there's a road that you can drive over, but there's no markers.
Right.
So there's almost nothing that I can show.
So it was hard to sell it to Airbnb.
They asked for, you know, what's your experience with this? Well, I'm not an experienced tour guide. I mean, I could probably fudge that a little bit, but I just couldn't come up with a good way to package it to make it more than just a ride in a car to look at some historical markers. I mean, because there's nothing gorgeous about it. Now, I could sell it as this is real life. This is what it looks like up these hollows, and it's desolate.
Right.
But I don't see people, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see people wanting to do that.
Right.
I thought about selling it with putting it together with a traditional coal miner's lunch and a traditional coal mine bucket and that kind of thing. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of work involved with that, but I don't know if I have time. So then you get into the pricing of it. And I never got it firmed up, you know, into the experience. And the last time I went in and looked, they weren't accepting new experiences, or it was being reevaluated or something. That was a few weeks ago. So I'm not sure if there was still or they're going to tag on new ones or not. But that's the long way around. And that's why I never got it condensed.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have a 30-second pitch for you for that, or an elevator pitch for that. And I just was never able to pull it together. But yeah. I do have information sheets and stuff for folks on them. And the idea, I could still do it if I could come out with a way to package it up and pull it off. So,
yeah.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze. And it felt a little like life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Because I could do it as part of the direct book. I could do it part of the direct book and upsell.
Going back to the direct book, what made you decide? I think probably I know, but what made you decide to do direct book? And how difficult was it? And Airbnb is obviously okay with that.
Well, they don't have a dog in that fight.
Okay,
you're not exclusive when you do Airbnb.
That's really cool.
You'll see a lot of folks with the offsite, like I lovingly call them absentee hosts, because they may own the property and own the building that you're in, but you never see them. You never shake hands with them. You never get to know them. You never anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet you have. And so they may be listed with VBRO or other travel agencies to rent those, because they're in the business of renting space and, you know, making money that way.
Right.
I like interacting with people. I like to sit down if they want to. Now I try to gauge when somebody comes in, whether they are the chatty type or just leave me alone. I just want to get a good night's sleep and I want to be out the door.
Right. Yeah.
Or somewhere in between. And I've had all kinds of them. So Airbnb doesn't have a play in that. What I wanted to do is a direct book takes out all those fees. Now you do give up some things. You have to do your own marketing and you have to do your own payment and you have to do, but.
Well, and you had to put up a website.
Well, yeah, I do that anyway, but yeah. So you're going to have your website. You're going to have, and well, you could just do it with Facebook, you know,
that's
or
true.
YouTube
that's
or any of that. I use one, it's called Free to Book, but there's a basic level that's at no charge. But then with each step up there or each little added thing, there's a few charges, but it's out of the UK. But just to take that middle person out, I got to the point where I was comfortable not having all of that and having it used to be you could the guest would see, you know, what they paid and they would see what the host paid. Now it's all in one. It's just one lump payment. And so the guest gets the idea in their mind that, oh, I don't have fees to pay anymore. But in fact, I don't pay any fees until you pay me. So you're actually paying all the fees anyway. And I've seen hosts because this is on the back side of all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is that hosts are, you know, they'll add cleaning fees and they'll add all these other fees. And you think, oh, okay, there's an extra fee for cleaning the room. Well, they're going to clean the room anyway. Mm-hmm. So I just had one flat rate And just because you were going to pay those fees anyway, and they were just all part of it. I wasn't going to split it out and say, you know, because I'm not going to not clean the room.
Right.
And I'm not going to not restock. And I'm not, of course, I don't allow pets, but I'm not going to, you know, not charge extra for pets if I was allowing pets.
Right.
So I just have the one. I don't try to make it look.
So you did the Airbnb for a while to kind of get your experience, and then you started doing the direct bookings once you started comfortable. I think that's a really good way to go about it.
And I still do both.
Right.
But now with the direct book, I offer more value. I offer, you know, the opportunity to have hand ground coffee in the mornings instead of store bought coffee or Keurig. I mean, well, they can still have the Keurig or whatever, but the opportunity is there. They can have what I call a coffee and chocolates package, which is West Virginia roasted coffee. It's roasted by a company out of St. Albans, which is a few miles from me, called Coal River Coffee. So I buy the whole beans, and I have a hand grinder, and I'll grind it up. And there's a chocolate company in West Virginia called Halls Chocolate, H-O-L-L-S. And I bought, you know, some of their chocolates, and I offer that, you know, in the room if you buy that package. And I'll do occasionally some seasonal things, you know, I didn't do Mother's Day this year, but like maybe flowers in the room, because I don't do flowers in the room, but I do usually have fresh flowers on the table because, you know, I get to enjoy those too.
Right. Yeah.
it's an excuse to go buy some flowers. But so there's those things. And, you know, every now and again around the holidays or something special, I'll do something that's an upsale, really. Yeah,
right.
And
so they pay separate for those things.
Yeah, they would add those, but they're not. Well, yes and no. They're paying separate for some of them. For some of them, it's just it's a courtesy if they want it. But because they've direct booked, like the there's a couple different breakfasts that I'll do that are actually a separate charge, like fried mush and bacon and coffee and stuff, which is a local, well, it's not necessarily a local, but it's an old time breakfast with West Virginia honey or West Virginia molasses or West Virginia maple syrup. You know, it's a separate little package thing. But there are some things that, you know, direct book guests just get because they're direct book. And they save money because you're not paying the extra to Airbnb.
I can't remember what Airbnb chart takes, but I think it's like 30% or something.
Yeah, it's something along those lines. And but when you add it together, because you're looking at your guest fee and the fee to the.
Right. Yeah.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it really is. So,
if you had a big house that was, I don't know, $800 a night, it's not a big deal. But when you're just renting a room for, don't know, $75, it ends up, and you get a lot of, especially if you get a lot of turnover, it does end up.
Yeah.
It ends up cutting into it. Everything, every little cent counts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. And I'm not in a big touristy area anyway. A lot of my guests are coming off the turnpike. They're traveling through.
Okay.
I have had folks, I had last summer, I had a travel nurse that stayed several weeks with us, and she needed a washing machine. My washing machine is in the basement. I don't let people in the basement. It's just, it's an unfinished basement. It's where I keep my, food and you know, my pantry items and things like that. And it's just not, there's nothing structurally wrong, but it's just not you just don't want people in your basement. It's like I said, it's unfinished and all our stuff's down here. But, and I don't traditionally provide laundry service anyway, but she was going to be here for a long time. I got a portable washing machine and gave her access to the clothesline outside, and I gave her some racks to dry in the room so that she could wash her work clothes and stuff. You know, so I did make that for her. But usually my guests are
You're accommodating to your
So now laundry is that's an option for someone who wants to stay more than a couple nights. I mean, it's got to be, you know, worth it, not just, but, But usually our guests are just traveling through, or they're coming in for a concert or something. So they're just usually one night. So they're not here to, you know, do a lot of stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, that I think that this is something that, you know, people can consider an extra room in their house, or if they have a basement or even a small apartment or something somewhere.
Yeah.
We've stayed in a few. I've stayed in a bed and breakfast too.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also stayed in a few Airbnbs.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have been like in a basement where somebody finished it off and there was a separate entrance and stuff. But I think it's a really good way to.
Yeah. And it's
be home more and not have your typical 9-to-5 job, or if you need to do both, I think it's just a really good way to gain
and
some
income. You can meet some of the most amazing people. We had a young man stay here that was a cellist, and he was traveling to different universities that as part of a summer music program thing, and he was rehearsing, or I guess he was practicing. One evening I had to take my grandnephew to Boy Scouts. This has been a couple years ago, and we come back and the young man was practicing, and my grandnephew just stood in the doorway and stared at him for about 10 minutes solid. This is an ADHD kid, you know, and he just stood there, just was amazed. And it was so beautiful to hear that young man. And then I've had several kind of like folk musicians, folk singers come through. A couple folks that then my husband used to be in a local band that traveled the state for a while. So we've got piano and keyboards and guitars around, and a couple folks have sat down and talked to him, and they've plinked guitars, you know, for a few minutes, and had a young man coming through. He was out of, I want to say, New York. Now, it wasn't the big university in New York, but he was spending his summer. He was a film student, and he was spending the summer going to the different shuttered coal mine communities. And he was going to some that we'd never even heard of. And we got the maps out and started looking. It's like, oh, man, you know, just that weren't there. And he was doing documentaries on this.
Okay,
and we talked with him for hours. I mean, it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when we finally quit talking. And that was only because the husband had to get up and go to work. But we have met some really interesting people. And then I've had some duds. I've had some duds.
Well, that's so cool. So speaking of duds,
mm-hmm.
it probably is something I should ask you. Have you ever had issues with like somebody just totally trashing the room? That's one of the nice parts about being there as the host.
Yeah.
Less likely to do that, but have you had any issues?
I've had a couple things that are really, really strange. Not so much trashing the room, like, you know, busting a guitar or squirting ketchup everywhere or anything like that. I had a young man who, well, I say young man, that's relative to my age, but he was grown. He was in the area taking civil service exams, and he was here for 2 days or 2 nights, and his command of English was not that strong. We were able to communicate, but it was a challenge. So my husband was in Indiana working, and this was one of my first guests. So this was within the first 6 months, and he came in and he acted afraid of the dog. And that clued me off to he probably didn't read the full listing anyway, because he acted like he didn't know I had a dog. So the first evening he'd gone out and had his dinner and whatever he did, and he came back in, and I thought he was up for the night, and I was watching television downstairs, and he came downstairs in his underpants.
Oh boy.
And nothing else. And I thought, okay. And I just kind of stopped, and I thought, do I go ahead and say, because we were already having difficulties, you know, communicating anyway, do I say something? What am I going to do here? And he came down the next morning in his underpants and ate breakfast. And I thought, I really need to say something, but what do you say? You know, why is he coming down anyway in his underpants? And so I was on the message board in the host part of the Airbnb community and was asking people, and I had people say, throw him out. I thought, well, I hate to just throw him out because it's just not in my nature. But then I had someone else say, this is a cultural thing. And he does not. Yeah, he doesn't understand that you don't do that. And I thought, how does somebody not understand not to walk around in your underpants in front of a strange person, you know? But the more I never got a really good feeling of what to do. And I thought, he's not here except a few hours anyway. Just stay, keep in the living room. So I stayed in the living room because he got up and he went and he took the exams and he didn't come back till about 7 or 8. And then he went upstairs and he stayed except for when he went to the restroom. And so because our restroom in this old house is downstairs.
Oh, okay.
And it's a shared bathroom. So you have to come down to go to the bathroom. And I thought, just leave it and let the guy go and just don't even make it an issue. Well, when he left at that time in one of the dressers that I have upstairs, they have a couple little small drawers because they're these antique, you know, chest of drawers. And they have a couple small ones on top and the full size ones down. And I had in there a little box of travel things, like a travel razor and a travel shave cream thing, just, you know, and a little sign up on a little plastic frame that said, if you've forgotten something, that, you know, here, help yourself. He'd gone through those and he'd opened all of them. And I had some things for ladies that guys don't use in there. And he'd opened all those and, you know, like,
okay,
what are you doing there, buddy? And again, it was he probably had no idea what those things were.
Maybe, yeah.
And I thought, well, okay, open one, but why did you open them all? So I decided at that point I wasn't going to offer those anymore. And if someone kind of said, oh man, I don't have my shaving cream or whatever, I have some, I can, you know, just ask if you need them.
Right. Yeah.
Plus there's a Walmart within a mile. So most of those things, yeah, you can run up and get them anyway. But, you know, that was my trying to have everything and anticipate everything. And I didn't anticipate that. But probably the biggest problem I have. The biggest problem I've run into is people not reading the full description.
Okay.
The most consistent complaint when I get them is the narrow check-in window, which I have set from 3 to 6 in the evening. And that's it, because we get up at 4 o'clock. And if you're coming in at 8 or 9, we're staying up. The dogs are staying awake. We're having to show you the room. You're thumping in and out, and it just, you know, upsets the household. And people not reading that it's a shared bathroom, but it's downstairs and the room's upstairs. I've had 3 different older ladies who have trouble with stairs come and say, I didn't realize there were stairs. It's all over. It's right. All over, yeah, the listing.
Right.
Then I've had a few people that complain that it's hard to find. I don't know how much clearer I can be. I've got a street address. Right. I've got rough directions. I've got a map posted. And, you know, if you're 100% relying on GPS, if you've got it set on scenic, it's going to take you up, down, and around. And backwards. My most recent guest that had severe heartburn messaged me with, what did she say? Oh, I'll be there about 9 o'clock and I'll need to take a shower. And I said, I had asked her, and this was an Airbnb guest, and I'm very careful of what I put in there because if somebody complains, then you have a record.
Right.
And I said, well, I asked you when you booked the room if you read the full listing and told you that people miss things like the check-in window. And your answer to me was, yes, I read the full listing and I realized I check in after 3. And her answer to me was, but I didn't think that meant, I didn't think that meant you had to check in between 3 and 6. To me, check in just means let you know, or some, there was some kind of strange. It wasn't.
Yeah.
And that ended up, that was bad for all of us all around. She was an educated woman. Insisting that to her check-in means something different than what I meant. And she gave me a very bad rating, saying it was hard to find. I was not flexible with check-in, which I am to a small degree, but
right.
And that there was something else that she said. I can't remember now what it was, but it was frustrating because it was completely a lack of her reading the
description
listing.
And the listing.
Yeah. And so what they do is they just hit the first available thing that looks like it's a decent price. And then so that, but this is, these are human things. You have this, yeah, if you're dealing with humans. So.
Yeah. So
but yeah, but that I, was, you know, that was definitely
good to
bad
talk about that and consider, yeah, those things. I mean, you have to.
And there's only so much you can do. In the first line of my listing, it says check in is from 3 to 6. This is firm. And I still get people saying, will you let me check in later?
Okay.
If it's an emergency, if you're tied up in legitimate traffic and I can see on a traffic app or something that, yeah, there's a wreck between here and there. And, you know, I'm flexible that way. But if you just say, I see your, and I do get this. I see your check in windows from 3 to 6. I can't be there till 10. No,
yeah,
this isn't the place for you to stay.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Thunderpants!
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah, so here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good. Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
Okay. So what are your plans going forward? Do you have plans to keep things the same, or are you going to be adding anything to like your homestead or your add-ons for people to purchase? Or,
well, we have the Etsy store, and I'm always trying to add, come up with, I'm just not that, some, there are people out there who just come up with ideas and things. Yeah, I'm not that way.
I have a hard time too.
But I am trying to add things to the Holstein House Etsy store. I was trying to do a hip camp. They initially accepted it, but then pulled it off the site and canceled it because I don't have the acreage that they insisted, which I didn't notice. And I read through it, and I didn't notice that they expected you to have X amount of property before you could do a hip camp. Apparently there's some kind of a requirement for that because it said there was no privacy from the neighbors and stuff. And I thought, well, I mean, that's kind of relative, but you know, the area that I was going to do for the hip camp was just basically kind of like I do with the Airbnb. You're traveling from here to there. There's no campground along the interstate, and you just want to stop for an evening. You know, here's enough space, and if you do a hip camp and you provide a structure like a cabin, you have to provide some type of toilet.
Right.
Well, I wasn't going to do that, but I don't want people peeing in my yard. So I was going to put, you know, one of the pop-up toilets with a hand washing station and stuff out for people when they.
Can you offer self-contained units, though? Or do you always have to provide a bathroom?
If you provide a structure, this is my understanding.
Yep.
If you provide a structure, there has to be a bathroom.
So if they're camping, then
so
you don't.
So if they're bringing their own stuff, if they're bringing their own tent and stuff, then you can make them responsible for their own bathroom. But I envision this, even though people are well-intentioned, having dealt with people with room here at the house, somebody's going to have to go in the middle of the night. And I got the door shut to the house.
Right.
So, and this was a thought, Brian.
Yeah, I know.
How do you pronounce his name?
I don't know.
I know
a lot of people in the group.
Lots Project.
Hip camps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Brian suggested it, and
a lot of homesteaders do it too. Like a lot of homesteaders do hip camp.
Well, they've got more property.
Yeah, some
they've got more property.
Yeah, yeah.
So he had suggested it, and I thought, oh, that sounds great, because I was trying to think of a way to have something extra that wouldn't be a big time demand on me.
Right.
And I could I may still be able to do it. It just wouldn't be through them. So I don't get that promotion.
Like the private booking type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I have this area. I just for numbers, let's say a 10 by 10 area. If you need to stop on the way between North Carolina and Michigan, and you need to stop and you're camping and you can't get to one of the campsites or something. And I have this spot for, you know, let's just say $10 a night. And you'll have a bathroom area and a hand washing station. And put your tent here or park your camper van here and, you know, do it that way. I've also, but that, you know, like I said, Hip Camp initially accepted me. And then they said, no, you can't because you don't have enough property. Okay. I'm thinking about putting in an EV charging station. I've only had one guest in the whole time that I've had the room open ask about charging an electric vehicle. And he had it charging just on a regular outdoor outlet here at the house, only about 5 or 6 hours because he was out fairly late. And by the time he got in and plugged it in and then had to get up and leave. So it was only about 5 or 6 hours. And my understanding is that on a house charger isn't very much. I don't know jack squat about electric vehicles. Yeah. So I've talked to my dad about it because my dad's always around. And I said, I'm not sure what I have to do. And dad's like, oh, you got to do this, and this is no big deal. And you just get somebody to do it. I'm like, that's part of the problem there is just getting somebody to do it.
Right.
Yeah. You have to have the space on your breaker, which I don't have here, but in the shop that it actually belongs to my dad. It was his welding shop for a long time, but my husband has it now for a car garage. There's enough. We could do that, and I could put a pole. I mean, I have this all in my head. I know how I can make it happen.
It's a way that you could make money. You could charge people to charge.
My understanding is there is a way to do it, and I've lost the link. I lost where I had that link saved. That there is an app that, you would pull up to the pole.
More people do it.
Yeah, you'd pull up to the pole and you'd punch in the numbers, and it would already be preset what the rate was, and you know, it would be on the grid of or map of electric charging stations or something. My understanding, it's out there. I've seen it somewhere and I've lost the link to that, and I've hunted and searched and I just can't find it, but it's out there somewhere, I know.
Yeah.
And we do.
These are all like really good ways to think about for people.
Yeah. And I can promote that, you know, to the room, if you drive an electric vehicle, you can charge, but cause you want the fast charging.
Yes.
You know,
like it does it a lot faster.
Yeah.
Just plugged in.
Yeah. So, and that's why you need I think it's a 50 amp breaker. I think it's my ability to do electrical stuff is right up there with my ability to build skyscrapers. It doesn't exist. But so that's there. They're kind of, I mean, you do have an upfront cost with those.
Right.
And then you have to figure out and I looked at my electric bill. And it actually said on there, for rate information, contact customer service. So my actual rate's not on my bill.
Oh, interesting.
And I never noticed it before. Because, you know, you're paying the electric bill, regardless of what it is, you're paying an electric bill.
Yeah.
And I never noticed that the actual rate was not listed there. Now, I could try to do the math, but there's some other fees dumped in that. So, you know, say, let's say my electric bill is $50. Inside that $50 is some taxes and stuff in addition to the rate. So
delivery fees and all that junk.
Yeah. Yeah. So trying to pull those out and then do the math on the kilowatt hours versus all this other.
But it's still an idea. And that's kind of why I wanted to have you on, because I think, you know, many of us are trying to figure out ways to bring income into the homestead and into the house and still remain home, at least most of the time.
Yeah.
Away from, you know, like your regular job, because one of the hard parts about being on a homestead is it requires a lot of attention and a lot of energy. So the more you're home, doing these little side gigs and these multiple streams, it just makes it a lot easier to be home and make your bread.
And if one
have
of the
ducklings and all that.
Yeah. And one of the things that I don't have to deal with now at the present is my son's grown. And I don't have grandchildren here. And so I don't have to worry if I have someone come and stay that I have children in the house. Now, if you have children at home, you may want to consider only if you consider an Airbnb kind of or a B&B kind of thing, having only guests with children.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe promote it as an opportunity. The chickens where that you could offer your guests to participate in feeding the chickens or, you know.
Oh, yeah,
something.
That's cool.
So that it's not like a dude ranch kind of thing, but
a farm, you know, kind of experience, or
you can add a little experience to that so that you're bringing in people with children so that you're not as worried. I've had no that other than the gentleman I gently refer to as Captain Underpants. Other than that, I've not had any really sketchy people.
Okay.
And part of the reason I was able, I think, to avoid that was, you know, going with my gut reaction that this doesn't feel right. There's something not right about this.
Yeah.
To, you know, reading the host, and even if you don't actually activate your Airbnb and you create the listing, but you never actually activate the calendar, you can get in and you can read that host's forum and you can read about some of the experience. Now, some of them are going to be out there because there's other countries involved.
Right.
Because Airbnb is all over the world. But one of the things
helps give you some ideas about
it does. It helps. You can do
and
a search
to avoid
on
things too.
Yes. And one of the things that I think has helped me not get the really strange people post Captain Underpants was that I inched my rates up.
Okay.
You know, I'm never going to get $100 a night out of that room. This is a very old house. The bathroom obviously is separate, like I've said before. So it's a shared bathroom. There's only so much I can do with that room to keep with the period, you know, and I'm not going to go out and make it a modern guest room when the rest of the house is fairly close to it. It's not perfectly, but it's fairly period correct. So I have to come up with ways to upsell, you know, so, but to get that rate up where it's at right now, it's a little uncomfortable, but it does weed out a lot of the
right. Like if you
not
offer
perfect, but
$25 a night, you're going to get some sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because anybody can hawk something they stole for $25. And then, you know, if you get the, I just need a place to stay for a couple of nights because my husband beat me and I've got to find a place to live. I'm not making light of spousal abuse in any manner, but you're looking for trouble if you get into that, because some of those people don't leave, or they don't pay, or they, you know, there's all kinds of,
or the abusive,
or the spouse shows up on your doorstep, yes, and involves you in something you just don't need to get involved with,
right?
So if you do, a piece of advice for anyone who would use Airbnb and wants to transition into direct book, make sure you get, it doesn't have to be free to book. Now they don't sponsor me. I don't have an account with you know, an affiliate right. with them. They and there's other ones like it, but you can subscribe to them, pay a little extra, and they manage both calendars so you don't end up double booked.
Okay.
Because otherwise you're trying to juggle the Airbnb calendar, and as soon as you get a booking over here, closing it over here, or the other way around.
Yeah, I know people that have multiple, like they have Airbnb, VRBO, HipCamp. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could mm-hmm. get quite the
yeah, juggle. It can, it can, and there are programs out there for that, so cool. that you cool. that can sync those for you. You do you know you pay for it, but the only thing I haven't figured out yet. That I want to do is, well, it's not the only, but the I want to work on accepting Bitcoin.
Okay.
And I don't have a smooth way to do that and block the calendar. I mean, I can invoice you for and you can, we can get that taken care of. And then I've got Bitcoin, you know, or Satoshis. But that doesn't block the calendar. So I still have to do that extra step, which is okay for now because I don't have that big of a, I don't have a demand for people using Bitcoin. Okay. But the fewer steps that I need to take, the more time I have. So if I can get that worked out where, you know, you're wanting to pay with Bitcoin, I'm invoicing you and it's getting
right.
set up.
A lot of steps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, this has been really interesting.
Yeah, I just glanced at the clock, and I know you have a tight schedule this morning. So
okay. I kind of knew that we might talk a little while, and that I would have.
I have that.
I gave myself a cushion to get ready for work.
So. I have that habit.
Well, so do I, and especially when it comes to, you know, talking about having a small homestead and trying to make some extra money and make that all work together. That's kind of, I'm exploring a lot of things right now, and I know a lot of people are. So thank you so much for
coming. Well, anytime, just not every subject, but just about any subject, you know.
Yeah.
You want to holler at, we can make time for them. Well, thank you for asking.
All of your, you're going to send me some links, and we'll put those in the show notes for all the listeners.
I will get that to you.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Well, I hope this has given some ideas to those considering renting a space in their homestead. See you next time, and grow where you're planted.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I wanna flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. A lot of folks don't understand why I wanna live this way. They've never eaten from their land like we do here. Snapping beans like grandma did, sitting on her front porch. Hunting and fishing like a kid, once you've done all of your chores.